It's a man, baby.
Oh, my.
Light bulb.
Good morning and welcome into this Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there. I'm Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping that your weekend was great and that you're looking forward to a pretty doggone good week as well. Our weekend around our place was, we'll get into that in a minute. But how are you? Hopefully you're doing well. Hopefully your weekend was good. And you had some time to get away, shut down, unplug, and get and just detox. Is that a good way to put it? Detox? I think it is a good way to put it. The detox over the weekend. Trust me, there was not a whole lot to get excited about over the weekend. It was just one of those weekends where the big story of the weekend is a washed up, has been, really wasn't all that great NFL quarterback trying to attract attention to himself, then your weekend was pretty tame. And we'll get into the story of the washed up, never was all that great NFL quarterback very, very shortly. Okay. But first, you know, I was thinking, and that's always dangerous for me, Monday should have a song.
Oh, Monday! Thank gosh it's Monday, my number one day. Back in the saddle at work I can shine. I love the rat race and the starting line is Monday. Thank gosh it's Monday.
Everybody sing along.
Sing come on with me, Gary.
You're the only moron in the whole world who actually likes Monday.
Thank gosh it's Monday.
Oh, no.
The yummy yum yum day.
Please stop.
I'll have a Krabby Patty.
Or two or three.
Yeah, come on, Tommy, sing with me. It's Monday. Thank gosh it's Monday.
Thank gosh it's Monday. Thank gosh it's Monday.
Where would we be without SpongeBob SquarePants? That's all I want to know. Thank gosh it's Monday. It is the beginning of a new week. Hopefully your week has already begun shaping up to be good for you and those around you. And I hope so. I really do. Because it all depends on the way you look at it. And I know that sounds really, it sounds very optimistic, but that's kind of what it boils down to. You can't let the idiots who are giving us the news determine your attitude about everything. You can't be angry about everything, because if you're angry about everything, then they have succeeded. Succeeded in what? They've succeeded in manipulating you emotionally. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make you angry, because when you get angry, you don't think, you feel. And when you feel, you make mistakes. And when you make mistakes, they win. So don't let them manipulate you. Remember the story I've told in the past about working for the guy who kept everybody on edge? That was his management style. And the young lady who one day figured out his management style, and she got fired. When she figured him out, he couldn't manipulate her anymore. And he let her go. This kind of thing goes on all the time in the world of politics. They seek to manipulate you, because if they can, they win. You stop thinking, you start getting emotional, and when you get emotional, they can accomplish pretty much anything they want to. So don't get emotional. Look at everything, take a step back, take a couple of deep breaths, calm yourself down, look at the facts, and figure things out instead of going crazy. For example, there's something we could all get really, really, really upset about today. But we have to look at it very calmly, very rationally, matter-of-factly, examine everything all of the information that we have available so far, and then determine where to go from this. And you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. The new Ford Mustang. Why is it electric? That's what I'm talking about. After years of waiting, Ford has finally introduced their first all-electric car. It's called the Mustang Mach-E, and it's electric. It's a little SUV, and it runs on a battery. And no, it doesn't go under the tree for Christmas. We've come to expect from higher performance electric vehicles, and we're getting it from the Mach-E. They're going to give you two motor configurations, a pair of battery options. First, you can have the car in a performance-focused, grippy, all-wheel drive spec, or you can sacrifice a bit of all-weather ability for more range with just the rear-wheel drive-only option. There are two battery choices, the standard 75-kilowatt-hour battery or the extended-range 99-kilowatt-hour battery. Ford says the extended-range rear-wheel drive version will travel 370 miles on a single charge. 370 miles. Now, that's as tested in Europe. I haven't got any American specs on it yet. The entry-level Mach-E will be rear-wheel drive, single electric motor, putting out 257 horsepower. There's a 289 horsepower option with the larger battery. Out of those, you get 280 or 370 miles, depending on which configuration you choose. In extended range, the all-wheel drive car will be putting out around 337 horsepower, 335 miles of travel. In terms of performance, the rear-wheel drive models will do 0 to 60 in under 8 seconds. The all-wheel drives will, they'll shave about a, well, add about a second to that. Take them a little bit longer. And let's see, what else is there? Three driving modes, whisper, engage, and unbridled. Horse puns. Each driving mode changes the throttle response. The interior ambient lighting colors and the engine sounds also change. And they're not telling anybody what it really sounds like. My guess is it sounds like a golf cart. A big, expensive golf cart. And by expensive, I say entry level around 50 grand. That's quite a bit of money. Now, we found out months ago that Ford has decided that the Mustang will be the only sedan it's going to produce from this point on. They're only going to be producing the Mustang, and now the Mustang SUV. Sedans and SUVs. That's going to be a sedan. Well, the Mustang and SUVs. That's Ford from now on. That's what you can look for. Why? That's what they're selling. They're selling SUVs and Mustangs. So, they're going to focus on that. Good for them. Good for them. So, now you know everything that you can know about the most important story of the weekend, the new electric Mustang SUV. Now, I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm just not. What was the other big story of the weekend? Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick. Former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick was scheduled to participate in a league-planned workout Saturday. But, at the last minute, he changed the terms, which could have messed up his chances at returning to the league. I don't think he ever intended to return. It seems Kaepernick refused to agree to the NFL's conditions regarding the workout. So he chose to perform his workout at a local Atlanta high school instead. Up to 25 clubs sent representatives to watch and grade Kaepernick, but with the shift in venues, this mess actually gives the NFL a leg up in showing the world how they tried. And the part-time civil rights activist, that's Kaepernick in case you were missing that, decided to poop on his chances. The NFL released a statement about what transpired. Of course, there are those who will say, well, they're covering themselves. Okay, fine. And here's what the NFL said. He informed us of that decision at 2:30 p.m. today, along with the public. This is the day of the event. Today's session was designed to give Colin what he has consistently said he wants, an opportunity to show his football readiness and desire to return to the NFL. 25 clubs were present for the workout, and all 32 clubs, their head coaches, general managers, and other personnel executives would have received video footage of the interview and workout shot by the Atlanta Falcons video crew. It is important to note the following. As stated above, More than three-fourths of the NFL clubs were present for today's workout. The NFL made considerable effort to work cooperatively with Collins' representatives. We invited his agent to suggest questions for the interview. Yesterday, when Collins' representative said he wanted to bring his own receivers to the workout, we agreed to the request. In addition, Coach Hugh Jackson discussed with Collins' agent what drills would be run at the workout so that Collins would know what would be expected of him. Last night, when Nike, with Collins' approval, requested to shoot an ad featuring Colin and mentioning all the NFL teams present at the workout, we agreed to the request. On Wednesday, we sent Collins' representative a standard liability waiver based on the waiver used by National Invitational Camp at all NFL combines and by NFL clubs when trying out free agent players. At noon today, Collins' representatives sent a completely rewritten and insufficient waiver. We heard for the first time last night, around the same time we heard from Nike, that Colin wanted to bring his own video crew. We heard for the first time this afternoon that Colin wanted to open the event to all media. We agreed to have Colin's representatives on the field while the workout was being conducted and to allow them to see how it was being recorded. We did so even though we have been clear from the beginning that this is a private workout. As is typical with NFL combines, one video crew was prepared to shoot and distribute video of the interview and workout. We confirmed with Collins' representatives that they would receive both the video that would be sent to all 32 clubs as well as the raw footage from the entire event, which is unprecedented. The location Collins selected is more than an hour away from Flowery Branch. We're grateful to the Falcons, who made available the club's first-class facility, along with athletic training, equipment, and communications staff, to ensure that today's workout would occur under real, ideal conditions. To coaches Hugh Jackson and Joe Philbin, who were prepared to run a workout that would allow Colin to demonstrate his skill level, and to Jeff Foster and the Combine staff for arranging for other players to participate and for managing the logistics of the workout. Collins' decision has no effect on his status in the league. He remains an unrestricted free agent eligible to sign with any club. And that is what the NFL said. Now, here's a summary. Let's just sum up what they said here, okay? We worked with Colin and took all of his requests seriously. We found the venue and had an audience ready to view the entertainment. We accommodated his requests to video the tryst. We took outfit requests. We even allowed him to bring his friends to participate. We waited patiently and said, "Please, sir, can I have some more?" We did everything a good league is supposed to do, yet none of this was enough to fulfill his fantasies. We were summarily rejected. This is a travesty, and it's his fault. You know when you go for a job interview and can't remember one time you got to tell a... You go to a job interview... You can't remember that one time you tell the company where you wanted them to meet you to ask you questions. You know, it just doesn't work that way. When you go to a job interview, the place you're interviewing with sets the rules. They set everything. So this is what Colin Kaepernick was granted. He was granted, and I have to say this, this has to be part of the settlement with the NFL that they grant him this, right? And as a result, he got as cocky as he could get and changed the ground rules completely. Completely. As a result, instead of 25 representatives seeing him, 8 did. Less than a third of the number that would have seen him perform saw him perform. And if I were a betting person, I would bet against him getting a gig in the NFL. I think what he's done is he has proven to everyone involved, anyone and everyone who bothers to pay attention and is honest with themselves and with life in general, will admit Colin Kaepernick was just in this for the publicity. And I'll tell you, he had something to say. Let's see if we can pull up his audio here.
Work you do for the people and telling the truth. That's what we want in everything. I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people. We're out here. We're ready to play. We're ready to go anywhere. My agent, Jeff Nally, is ready to talk to any team. I'll interview with any team at any time. I've been ready. I'm staying ready.
Yeah, unless that happens to be where the NFL actually arranged it to be and in front of the 25 team representatives the NFL set up for you. It also doesn't help his case that he wore a shirt with the name Kunta Kinte on it when he walked out in front of everybody, as if to say, he's a slave. He's the one that's oppressed. Yeah, right. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh, my. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. You know, when your weekend, the big story of the weekend consists of a washed-up NFL player posturing for the press, and that's the big story, it ain't so bad, you know? Hey, I want to keep on this for just a minute, okay? Please. Indulge me, because I want to just kind of round this up and remind you of a couple of things. The scouts say his performance at his little setup was average. It was just average. My favorite quote from Twitter is this: he was never going to make the money he believed he deserved on the field, so he figured out how to game Nike into paying him instead. Now he needs to stay relevant to keep the checks coming. That's an interesting angle, because now we have to think about what Nike's going to do. What is Nike going to do now? Now that Kaepernick has revealed himself to the world for what he really is. What is Nike going to do? Well, I wanted to go back in the Wayback Machine and remind you of a little something. Let's go back to November 3rd, 2015, early in the morning, to an article, by Mike Floss at USA Today. And it's called Seven Facts That Explain Why Colin Kaepernick Was Just Benched for Blaine Gabbert. Remember, Kaepernick was playing for the 49ers, and the San Francisco 49ers benched him amid a 2-6 season. Confirming their commitments to his death spiral, the 49ers named Blaine Gabbert as Kaepernick's replacement. Gabbert might be the worst quarterback employed by an NFL team at this juncture. Why then would San Francisco turn to his services? Consider these facts. We're going to count down from number 7 to number 1. Number 7, Kaepernick started his 49ers career with a 19-7 record as a starter from 2012-2013. Since that time, he's 10-14. 6. He's on pace for career lows in pretty much every major stat category. Through San Francisco's first 8 games, Kaepernick is on pace to throw 12 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, get sacked 56 times, and have a quarterback rating of 78.8%. All career worsts. Number 5. The 49ers haven't scored a touchdown in 2 games. Number 4. The 49ers would pay Kaepernick $16.7 million in 2016, but if San Francisco cuts him before April 1st, they'd end up saving $6.9 million. Number 3, in 2013, Kaepernick averaged 1.3 touchdowns per game against 0.5 interceptions. In 2015, he's averaging 0.75 touchdowns per game against 0.625 interceptions. Interceptions. And number 2, from 2012 to 2013, Kaepernick rushed for 9 touchdowns. He's rushed for 2 touchdowns since. And in the 2 years since, it's in 2 years, it's gone from him being beloved, enjoying life, to being the guy on the ground underneath the guys who were sacking him. So, even then, the sporting world understood that Colin Kaepernick just wasn't delivering the goods. Now, you combine the fact that he was not delivering the goods with the fact that he's decided to become a social justice warrior. And you have a deadly combination. That combination is he's not worth the money, and he brings too much drama to the table. And that is why Colin Kaepernick is unemployed today. That's why he's still a free agent. He's not good enough, and he brings too much drama to the table. That is why he is where he is. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Shifting gears, another thing over the weekend. And I hate to do this because I know this stuff going on in Washington, D.C. makes you just as sick as it does me, but we got to get back to it. And in particular, probably the worst of the worst, Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff, God love him, bless his heart. Over the weekend, he attacked President Donald Trump, called him a charlatan, and vowed to send him back to the golden throne he came from. He was in Long Beach, California, making a speech at the California Democratic Party State Convention. And he told attendees, 2 years ago, I stood before you and I urged you to resist, and you did. But we are more than a resistance now. We are a majority. We are a majority in one house, and we will become a majority in the other, and we will send that charlatan in the White House back to the golden throne he came from. He went on, the most grave threat to the life and health of our democracy comes from within, from a president without ethical compass, without understanding of our devotion to our Constitution. Well, that statement in itself is laughable. As if the Democrats even understand the Constitution. There is nothing more dangerous than an unethical president who believes that he is above the law. Yeah, I know. We suffered through 8 years of that with Obama. Earlier Saturday, President Trump lampooned the House Intel panel chair, misspelling his name, substituting T's for the F's, in a tweet highlighting the Dow Jones Industrial Average surpassing 28,000 for the first time ever. And here's what he tweeted. Dow hits 28,000, first time ever, highest ever. Gee, Pelosi and bleep have a good idea. Let's impeach the president. If something like that ever happened, it would lead to the biggest fall in market history. It's called a depression, not a recession. So much for 401ks and jobs. Schiff's comments came after the lawmaker led this week's inaugural public impeachment inquiry hearings, featuring top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, William Taylor, Deputy Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs, George Kent, and fired U.S. Ambassador to the Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. On Friday, Schiff was met with harsh criticisms from Republicans and media figures for accusing President Trump of witness intimidation in response to the president's tweet about Yovanovitch as she testified before impeachment investigators. Senator Ted Cruz tweeted this. This may be the single most ridiculous claim of the Dem show trial. No, the president's tweeting is not witness intimidation. You may not like the tone of some or even many of his tweets, but it's absurd to suggest that tweeting is an impeachable high crime or misdemeanor. Mark Levin, the guy I like to call the angry Yankee, the great one, he tweeted, I swear, the media are not only vicious, but they are nuts. You gotta love Levin. I swear, the media are not only vicious, but they are nuts. But for the fact that Schiff read the president's tweet to the witness during the course of the hearing, she would not have known about the tweet. How the hell is that witness tampering? Furthermore, it clearly hasn't changed the fact that the witness is testifying willingly and sticking to her script. Schiff also garnered blowback on Friday for interrupting Representative Elaine Stefanik, the Republican from New York, as she asked him whether he would continue to interrupt Republican lawmakers asking questions of witnesses, a fixture in previous closed-door depositions. Now, she was asking him if he was going to continue interrupting, and he interrupted her. Oh, by the way, Elaine Stefanik has she did an amazing job standing up to him and asking the right questions. Now, the Democrats are all talking about civility and order, and they're trying also to destroy Elaine Stefanik. They are raising funds for her opponent in an upcoming election. They're trying to get her bumped. They're trying to destroy her because she stood up to Adam Schiff, because she refused to be browbeaten and controlled. And she revealed things to the world that we needed to know. And now, because she's tried to actually tell America the truth, the Democrats are trying to destroy her. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Monday edition of the podcast. Monday, November 18th, 2019. We're 10 days away from Thanksgiving. Wow. Yeah. Of course, you can probably tell that by any shopping you may have done, because there's Christmas stuff everywhere. Oh, yeah. They've got turkey fryers on sale and things like that. But, hey, there's... It's Christmas. I have friends right now who are at Walt Disney World in Florida, and they're posting videos and pictures of Christmas decorations everywhere, and Christmas shows and Christmas parades. And I'm just sitting here at home shaking my head thinking, wow, it's not even Thanksgiving yet. But that's okay. I have actually been to the most magical place on earth during the Christmas holidays, and the Christmas parade, the Christmas party, the extra ticket item that they do at night during this time of the year is just spectacular. The whole thing, it is a huge milk and cookies, squeaky clean Americana look at Christmas, and it's really a lot of fun. So I don't really have a big problem with that. It's just. Can we have our turkey and dressing before we put the tree up? Of course not, because people everywhere are going nuts about this whole thing. It's just crazy. Let's see. I'm scanning through something really quickly while I'm yammering. And no, I'm not going to pull this one in for today. But let me tell you something I've got that's in the show notes for today, but I'm not going to get to, because I want you to get the show notes because of this particular story. It's from the Heritage Foundation, and I have to credit my friend Joel from Hawaii, who posted something about this on social media over the weekend, and it prompted me to look it up and respond. And I thought, you know, that's a good topic for the podcast, and it is a good topic for the podcast, and maybe at some point we'll dedicate a chunk of a podcast to it, or maybe an entire podcast, because I think it's important, and I think the national ignorance of it is dangerous, and that is ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting is basically, it's a scheme which is designed to disconnect elections from issues. It allows candidates with marginal support from voters to win. Essentially, if you boil it all down, ranked choice voting is legalized vote tampering. It is vote fraud legalized by the government. Because instead of making a clear choice for who you want to win an election, they say, well, rank the choices. Let's say you got five people. They rank them 1 to 5. And part of the problem with that process is that a lot of people won't do that. They'll just pick who they want. And if it comes down to a runoff, their vote could be just completely eliminated. So if you live in a state with ranked choice voting, there is a very real chance that your vote will be cast for someone you didn't want in office. Because the votes for the people lower on the list end up going to other people. I'll include the link to how it all works in today's show notes. And it's a very important thing. You need to grab the show notes for today and make sure you read this article and you understand ranked choice voting. Because, as I said, this is leftist progressive government legalizing vote fraud. That's all it is. They're legalizing vote fraud. Hopefully we can get into it in detail one day. And the thing is that sometimes these topics, these subjects, they're not entertaining, and it's hard to make them entertaining in order to hold attention for very long. And they're nonetheless important. You really, really need to understand what ranked choice voting is and why the left is so in favor of it. And that should be your first clue that there's something very fundamentally wrong with it. And that is, the progressives love it. That should be your first clue that something's wrong. Moving forward, back to Shifty Adam Schiff. He's finally released the testimony of Tim Morrison, the NSC senior director. And it doesn't do the Democrat cause any favors. The transcript of his testimony was released this weekend. Morrison's testimony completely destroyed the Democrats' latest attempt to remove President Trump from office. Worse yet, Morrison's testimony obliterates Adam Schiff's chief witness and reported second whistleblower, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who is unreliable and reports to Morrison. Morrison was on the July 25th call, the Trump-Zelensky call. He testified in Schiff's secret basement star chamber that nothing illegal was discussed on that Trump-Zelensky phone call. And that is why Schiff was holding those secret hearings behind closed doors in a basement. He doesn't want the American public to know that President Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky was completely above board. What the Democrats want is a lot of speculation. They want the pundits in the news media to speculate. And since the vast majority of them are progressives, they're going to speculate against your president because they don't like him. Here are the key points to Tim Morrison's testimony. One, he did not believe anything improper occurred on the July 25th call. Two, he testified that the memorandum of conversation, that's a phrase used to describe the call transcript, the memorandum of conversation of the July 25th call was complete and accurate. Now, that blows out of the water what the progressives are trying to convince everyone, that it is not complete, that it is inaccurate, that it is a forgery, that it is a fraud. They're trying to tell you that it's a lie. But a key witness behind closed doors has said that's not so. Mr. Morrison, who listened on the July 25th call, testified he was not concerned about the substance of what was discussed on the call, only that the transcript might leak. Now, why would he be concerned about the transcript leaking if there was nothing inappropriate on the call? Because it was a sensitive conversation between two world leaders. And because it was between two world leaders, the issue of trust comes up. Would you have a chat on a phone call with someone that released the transcript of that phone call to the world without asking you about it? Hey, is it all right? These people are trying to railroad me here. You remember that phone call we had? Is it all right if I release the transcript of that so people can see it was all above board? That question had to be asked. Mr. Morrison was told by National Security Council lawyer John Eisenberg that the July 25th call record mistakenly ended up on the highly classified system, debunking the Democrats' allegations of an attempted cover-up. Remember that? They were trying to convince everyone that something was being hidden because it was put on this extremely highly classified system server. Ignoring the fact that that was kind of common practice anyway, but whatever. Mr. Morrison repeatedly testified that he purposefully kept Lieutenant Colonel Vindman out of the loop on this matter because he had concerns about Vindman's judgment, which were also raised to him by Fiona Hill and others. Now, we have heard about Vindman from other sources that he is a progressive warrior, that he is a political wonk and leans hard left, that he is an anti-Trumper, and he was a pro-Obama guy. Even in the military, talking to foreign military personnel, he was apologetic for his country. Mr. Morrison testified that as the final clearing authority for any edits made to that particular phone call package, he accepted all of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's proposed edits. He testified he does not believe Burisma came up on the call, or that anyone suggested edits to the transcript, to include the word Burisma. Mr. Morrison testified that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman relayed two concerns to him about the July 25 call, that the call did not get into the subject matter they had hoped, and the fidelity of the translation. Mr. Morrison testified that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman never reported to Morrison any of the light queries that he received from Ukrainian officials in August regarding the hold on aid. And finally, Mr. Morrison confirmed that President Trump generally does not like foreign aid and specifically held concerns that corruption in Ukraine may cause the U.S. aid to be misused. And that goes to what Jim Jordan said last week, explaining why the aid was delayed. It wasn't held up permanently, it was just delayed. Because President Trump, first, doesn't like foreign aid. He believes we're being taken advantage of and that we are funding other governments who need to stand on their own two feet. And he was concerned about the corruption, which Ukraine was famous for. Everybody who knew anything about Ukraine knew corruption was the top thing you thought of when you thought about Ukraine. He wanted to make sure this new administration wasn't corrupt. And so he delayed awarding this aid until he could be sure that the money was not going to be spent on corrupt practices. And when he was assured that it was going to be fine, he released the funds. And he released the funds without them doing anything for him. This is the Daily Perspective, daily hour of observation, insight, and a little absurdity to make it all go down easier. I neglected to mention Tua's injury during the Alabama game over the weekend. A lot of support, prayers, and thoughts going out to Tua and the team. He's having surgery today because of the hip problem. They dislocated his hip during the game. He was taken off the field screaming. Opposing team fans gave him a salute as he was taken off the field. All very sportsmanlike. It was all very good, actually, except for his injury. And I hope you will remember Tua in your prayers today, because he is undergoing surgery. And once he recovers, he'll be okay. He has good NFL hopes, but he may be done at Alabama, and we'll see. It is a Monday edition of the podcast. I've completely lost track of where I was. Let's see here. Here's something that we didn't talk about that is fairly interesting. And Megyn Kelly, once with Fox News, then with NBC, got railroaded out of her position because NBC really didn't like her because she was not a good fit, and they looked for any excuse they could. And so finally, one day, she innocently says, "Yeah, when I was a kid, we used to, we could dress up as like Diana Ross, as you know, somebody of a different race for Halloween, and everybody thought that was cool." And of course, the the social justice warriors were all up in arms. They were clutching their pearls and gasping and passing out, and their cats were going unfed. And you know, so she lost a job. Well, Megyn Kelly is now reporting that the House Minority Leader is demanding answers from ABC News about the Epstein story. She revealed that House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy sent a letter to ABC News President James Goldston demanding answers for why the network didn't run on a report from a Jeffrey Epstein accuser. Kelly broke the news on her social media accounts Sunday evening, last night. Earlier this month, Project Veritas released a video of ABC News reporter Amy Robach discussing the information she received years earlier from Epstein accuser Virginia Roberts, Jeffrey, on a hot mic. The reporter can be heard expressing her frustration surrounding ABC News' refusal to air the interview and claimed that the network made the decision after receiving threats from Buckingham Palace when they'd found out Prince Andrew was implicated in the story. She also alleged that Epstein might have been murdered. McCarthy, in his letter to Goldston, demands answers behind the network's decision not to air the story. He asks the network 6 questions. Those questions are, 1, will ABC News provide Congress the interviews Ms. Robach conducted with the victim? Number 2, what did ABC News learn about Jeffrey Epstein after Ms. Robach first presented her story to the executives? Number 3, who was involved in deciding this story was not of public interest, and what were their reasons for deciding so? Can Ms. Robach expand on the outside forces she mentioned as potentially responsible for the story not running? Number 5, was ABC News ever presented with additional evidence on Mr. Epstein from the time Ms. Robach first brought her investigation to the network and when he ultimately was arrested? And number 6, were authorities alerted at any time after she presented ABC News executives with her reporting? If so, when and what was provided? ABC News employee Ashley Bianco, who clipped the remarks, the hot mic remarks. Remember, she was sitting in the chair under the lights with the hot mic. She was cutting promos, liners, and things like that for ABC News. And in between, she was grousing about this story. Yeah, I had this great story. We had everything. We had Clinton on. We had everything on Clinton. We had all of this stuff. Do I believe he killed himself? No. Do I believe he was murdered? 100% I do. She's grousing about having this awesome story and it getting tanked by ABC. And Ashley Bianco is watching this happen, and her job was to, as they call it, clip things. So she sees something happening. She makes note of the time code in the recording, sets it aside in the computer system for future reference. She didn't do anything with it, according to her testimony to Megyn Kelly in the video she released a couple of weeks ago. She just earmarked it, set it aside for future use, possibly. And everybody else in the building was sitting around monitors watching it, slack-jawed, not believing what they were hearing. Also, something to remember is that this kind of thing very often is an affiliate feed. So you have this live satellite feed going into affiliate stations across the country. And they're all watching this woman sit at the camera, griping about her story getting tanked. So not only were the people at ABC in New York all watching this happen and gossiping to each other about it. Wow, can you believe what she just said? Affiliates across the country were watching it as well. But Ashley Bianco was singled out. She had recently left the network and gone to CBS looking for an advancement in her career. ABC had a chat with CBS News. CBS News canned Ashley Bianco. Ashley Bianco went to Megyn Kelly with the story, and that's how we know what happened. They still haven't found the person who broke the story. They still don't know the real source. They just don't know. And I wonder if we ever will. You have to admit it's all very, very suspicious. Because Epstein's getting ready to testify. He is getting ready to spill the beans on a lot of important people. He was supposed to have a jail cellmate. That cellmate got moved. There were supposed to be cameras, live video cameras, monitoring everything, the cell, the hallway. They were supposed to have eyes on him at all time. Then the cameras, they weren't working. The guards on the shift, who were supposed to be keeping an eye on Jeffrey Epstein, both nodded off and went to sleep. That's the third thing that makes you go, Those things added up equal a whole lot more than a, They equal a, what the? Yeah, because something extremely fishy happened in that jail cell. We have heard reports that there was screeching, screaming. We've read the reports that the upper bunk was so close to the ground, there's really no way that he could have successfully hung himself and sustained injuries that he had. That's according to a medical examiner who has decades of experience and looked everything over and said, yeah, you see those injuries in strangulations, usually not in hangings, in suicides. Usually you see those injuries, those particular broken bones, you see those in strangulations. So it's all very, very, very fishy. And we're supposed to just ignore this and move along. Well, now, hopefully, the House Minority Leader will get some traction. And we'll learn something. But considering it is the House of Representatives and the Democrats are in charge, and the Democrats love to defend their own when their own commit criminal activity, unless there's just no way to avoid it, to avoid some sort of prosecution or punishment, I doubt this will get legs. But we'll have to see, won't we? Hey, that's it for the Monday edition. Have a great day. Meet me back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.